a day of carnage and death in Saudi Arabia and Iraq. In Mena, Saudi Arabia, hundreds of pilgrims attending the Hajj died when crowds stampeded during a stoning ceremony. The Minister of Pilgrimage Affairs and Endowments said more than 240 people were killed, as about 2 million people threw stones at pillars said to represent the devil. And in Iraq today, suicide bombers struck celebrations at two Kurdish political parties in Erbil, about 200 miles north of Baghdad. Hundreds of people were attending festivities marking the Muslim holiday Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice, according to wire service reports. Officials at the scene said more than 50 people died and more than 200 had been injured. And in the south, about 100 miles from Karbala, about 20 Iraqis died when a munitions dump exploded. A Polish government spokesman in Warsaw said the Iraqis had broken into the dump, which was being guarded by Polish troops. We're joined in the studio this morning by Noah Feldman. He's a professor of law at New York University and a former advisor to the occupation authority in Iraq. Welcome to the show, Noah.
Thank you for having me.
Michael O'Hanlon is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution here in Washington. He's in the studio as well. He's a frequent guest on our show. Welcome as always, Mike.
Nice to be here, Leah.
Mike, in the last year since the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq in March, untold numbers of Iraqis have died. We really honestly don't have any idea of the number. Many more have been maimed or orphaned. More than 500 American troops have died, British, Spanish, and Italian, and it's a very long list. Now, the Bush administration hopes to transfer authority to the Iraqis by this summer, and you've been optimistic in the past about the prospects for rebuilding Iraq. Are you still?
I'm still guardedly optimistic, Leanne, but I think one has to concede at this point there's been more bad news in the last few months than good news, despite the capture of Saddam Hussein. That has led to some important breakthroughs in the counterinsurgency. I think that piece of it is going pretty well. We are winning the counterinsurgency against the Ba'athists. And since we captured Saddam, we have increased our intelligence leads. We've increased the number of Ba'athists we're capturing or killing per day. But most other trends are not great, whether it's the number of coalition troops being killed, as you referred to, the state of security for most Iraqis, the attacks against Iraqis who are working with us. And now, perhaps worst of all, our basic plan for political transition doesn't look like it's taking hold. It's meeting a lot of resistance inside of Iraq. One last point, quality of life indicators are still not that bad, but they're not that good. They haven't made a whole lot of progress in the last 3 or 4 months. So on balance, I'm still optimistic because I think we face a small resistance that's a bunch of dead enders who are committed to Saddam Hussein and not much else. But on the other hand, anti-Americanism is growing, and there's a sense of frustration with the way things are going in Iraq, and our plan for transition and our long-term exit strategy right now aren't working all that well.
Noah, what about you? Do you think the Bush administration's plan for transferring authority is realistic?
The dates are going to be very, very tough to meet at this point. The choice of July 1st as a deadline for transferring political authority to Iraqis was not driven by anything internal to Iraqi politics. And the truth is, as a result, it's not written in stone. And the Iraqis understand that, even though the administration would like it to be, as I think one of them once said, holy writ. So the question is really, can we get a system in place which Iraqis will consider legitimate at an election? Because if they don't consider it legitimate, then there's no point in transferring power at all. We'll have transferred power to a body that is not perceived by Iraqis as really in charge.
Given also the various backgrounds and beliefs that live within the borders of Iraq, is it realistic to hope that there can actually be peace and democracy?
There is, and the reason to be optimistic is that no one group in the society can dominate all the others realistically. So they all have an interest in the long run in reaching a solution where power will be shared and resources will be shared around. The drawback is that negotiating a settlement like that requires representation from all groups. And right now, the Shia and the Kurds are relatively well represented, but we haven't seen a legitimate Sunni leadership emerging because the Ba'athists are out, because we won't deal with them. And a new leadership is taking time to emerge.
What about the infrastructure and progress on that? Supporters of the war have repeatedly said the media has ignored these stories in favor of reporting on the daily killings. Do you think that's true, Michael?
Well, the broad story here, Leanne, and to be very succinct about it, is that things are about like they were just before Saddam fell, but they're still not very good. And we haven't made much progress in the last 3 or 4 months. I could spew a lot of statistics, but that's the bottom line. And in the last 3 or 4 months, we've sort of plateaued at a level that is about where things were a year ago, and frankly, not nearly as good as things should be.
Noah, do you think L. Paul Bremer, the American in charge, is making progress building some legitimacy for Iraqi political entities and institutions?
The new things that are emerging are not the ones necessarily that Ambassador Bremer initially put into place, frankly. The Governing Council has some buy-in at the grassroots, but it's showing that it's responsive to Ayatollah Ali Sistani in large part because Sistani is saying that we need elections. And that means that until there are elections of some kind, there won't be significant legitimacy for anything that comes into power. You know, the Iranians just had a resignation of one-third of their legislators because Iranians don't think the elections are going to be legitimate in Iran. And the Iraqis are all watching that very closely. And they're saying that's what we don't want. We want an election that everyone gets to participate in.
Do you think, Noah, that an expanded UN presence can help stabilize that? I mean, they're agreed to send a small team of experts to study that.
The experts are trying to solve a short-term problem, which is when can we actually hold elections? And a report from them saying that we can't realistically hold the elections for another year or so would, I think, buy us that year until elections could be held. But that's a short-term fix, not a long-term solution. Eventually, there are going to have to be elections.
Mike, you pay close attention to military affairs, and we're talking in terms of years, maybe a year to the elections. What are you sensing now about the strains of this occupation on U.S. forces and military capabilities?
It's a complex answer, Leanne, but on balance, the Army is getting beaten up, and the reservists are quite concerned. You've seen the head of the Army Reserve in the last couple of weeks write an op-ed in the Washington Post declaring his concern with this situation. You have a very good story in the New York Times today, a lot of military wives of the 1st Infantry Division in Germany whose husbands are about to deploy to Iraq, and of course, there are many husbands whose wives are about to deploy as well, expressing a lot of concern to Mr. Wolfowitz about the strain on their families. On balance, this is a potential big crisis. And Mr. Rumsfeld still resisting any increase in the size of the Army, except for a relatively small amount he can do through emergency authority. I think that's a mistake on the part of the Secretary of Defense.
Michael O'Hanlon is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He's the author of many books and articles on international and military affairs. Once again, thanks for coming in, Mike.
Pleasure.
Noah Feldman is a professor of law at New York University and a former advisor to the occupation authority in Iraq. His book, After Jihad, America and the Struggle for Islamic Democracy, is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Noah, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.